This is Hour 2 of Seems Like Old Times. I'm Craig Orndorff, and a happy weekend to you wherever you are and whatever you're doing. Thanks for coming back for Part 2 of the show. Today we have a musical theme. It's football. Yeah, the season's underway. Hope your team got off to a great start. If not, there's always time to turn things around. And to celebrate the new season, we're throwing a perfect spiral to you with our collection of audio about the gridiron. And on the countdown today, we are back in September of 1964. And we're playing the biggest hits from that weekend according to Billboard Magazine's Pop Standard Singles Chart. Now, at that time, the big story in music were the Beatles and the British Invasion. And the duo at number 5 was part of that wave, but instead of playing rock and roll, they discovered that they had more success singing ballads. And this was one of the biggest hits for Chad and Jeremy, a summer song.
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walked by. Soft kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away, just you and I. Sweet, sleepy warmth of summer nights, gazing at the distant lights in the starry sky. They say that all good things must end someday. Say goodbye to you. Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain beats against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. Say that all good things must end someday. Autumn leaves must fall. But don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. When the rain beats against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. And dream of you.
There's Chad and Jeremy, Chad Stewart and Jeremy Clyde. They first met at drama school in London. And it's a good thing the duo came to the U.S. because they couldn't get played back in England. In fact, a summer song didn't even make the British charts. But here in America, it was at number 5 on the Pop Standard Singles Chart this week, heading up to number 2. It also made it to number 7 on the Hot 100. Well, the tune at number 4 also had crossover appeal. This is Gail Garnett.
We'll sing in the sunshine.
We laugh every day. My daddy, he once told me, hey, don't you love you any man? Just take what they may give you and give but what you can.
And you can sing in the sunshine.
You'll say,
we sang in the sunshine, you know we laughed every day, we sang in the sunshine,
then she went on away.
Twenty-two-year-old Gail Garnett, born in Auckland, New Zealand, raised in Canada. We'll Sing in the Sunshine. She was accompanied by the Sid Bass Orchestra. And that was at number 4 on the Pop Standard Singles Chart this week, 1964. Next week, it would be number 1. The tune made it to number 4 on the Hot 100, and it appeared on the country chart also. It was a million-selling disc, and Gail Garnett won a Grammy for Best Folk Recording. And we have gone back to September 1964 on Today Seems Like Old Times, when the President of the United States was Lyndon Johnson. There was no vice president, as Johnson was finishing John Kennedy's term. And by September of 64, there were more than 20,000 U.S. military forces in Vietnam. Americans killed in action there was now more than 400. And back in August, an incident that changed America's involvement in the war. On August 2nd, the destroyer USS Maddox was attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin. Fighter pilots from the USS Ticonderoga sank a North Vietnamese gunboat and damaged two others. Well, 2 days later, August 4th, the Maddox and another destroyer, the USS C. Turner Joy, believed that they were under attack again, but they were getting false information from their sonar and radar equipment, so the destroyers were counterattacking. Air support went up again, but saw no enemy vessels. One of the pilots, James Stockdale, would later say that there was nothing there but black water and American firepower. But back in D.C., President Johnson was told that the attacks did occur. And the next day, the U.S. retaliated by blowing up a North Vietnamese oil storage facility and a number of ships.
Air action is now in execution against gunboats and certain supporting facilities in North Vietnam, which have been used in these hostile operations. Aggression by terror against the peaceful villagers of South Vietnam has now been joined by open aggression on the high seas against the United States of America.
Then 2 days later, on August 7th, the Congress approved the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which gave President Johnson the approval to run the war himself without any oversight from the Congress or the military. That would lead to escalation of America's involvement in the Vietnam War. The Gulf of Tonkin incident, a recent headline here in 1964. And we're back to the countdown now, up to number 3 with Jerry Wallace.
In the misty moonlight, by the flickering firelight, any place is all right, long as I'm with you.
As long as I'm with you.
In a faraway land, on the tropic sea sand, if your hand's in my hand, I won't be blue. Way up on the mountain, or way down in the valley, I know I'll be happy any place, anywhere. I don't care, in the misty moonlight, by the flickering firelight, any place is all right, long as you are there. I could be happy in one little room with only a table and chair, as happy as I'd be in a kingdom by the sea. Darling, if you were there, and I could be rich, or I could be poor, but if you were by my side, I could be any place in this whole wide world, and I know I'd be satisfied. Way up on the mountain, or way down in the valley, I know I'll be happy, any place, anywhere. I don't care, in the misty moonlight, by the flickering firelight, any place is all right, long as you are there. In the misty moonlight, by the flickering firelight.
Survey song number 3 on the Pop Standard Singles chart this week in 1964, In the Misty Moonlight. That was Jerry Wallace. That would move up one more position, and it also hit number 19 on the Hot 100. And now it is movie time. Let's see what films Hollywood was giving us here 61 years ago. From Jerry Lewis, The Patsy, I'd Rather Be Rich, and Sandra Dee, Robert Goulet, and Andy Williams. And a good beach movie, Ride the Wild Surf, with Fabian, Tab Hunter, and Peter Brown. Also playing was Top Cappy, with Melina Mercury, Peter Ustinov, Maximilian Schell, and Robert Morley. A House Is Not a Home had Shelley Winters, Robert Taylor, and the debut of Raquel Welch. And there was The Killers with Lee Marvin, John Cassavetes, Clue Gulager, Angie Dickinson, and Ronald Reagan.
You get back to the hotel and stay there.
I like it here.
Go on, get moving.
I said, I like it here.
Well, I can change that in a hurry.
Also showing Night of the Iguana with Ava Gardner, Richard Burton, and Deborah Carr. Clint Eastwood in A Fistful of Dollars.
See, I understand you men were just playing around, but the muley just doesn't get it. Of course, if you were to all apologize... I don't think it's nice you laughing. You see, my mule don't like people laughing. It's the crazy idea you're laughing at him. Now, if you apologize like I know you're going to, I might convince him that you really didn't mean it.
And two from Sean Connery with Tippi Hedren and Marnie, and as Agent 007 in Goldfinger.
The purpose of our two previous encounters is now very clear to me. I do not intend to be distracted by another. Good night, Mr. Bond.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
And brand new from Disney, Mary Poppins, the film debut for Julie Andrews. Now, she had been turned down for the movie version of My Fair Lady, even though she'd played Eliza Doolittle on Broadway. So after that, she took the role of Guinevere in Camelot. And then one night, Walt Disney came backstage and offered her the starring role in Mary Poppins. And her performance won the Oscar for Best Actress.
It's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Because I was afraid to speak when I was just a lad. My father gave me nails a tweak, told me I was bad. But then one day I learned a word to save me aching nose.
The biggest word you ever heard, and this is how it goes. Oh, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Under little underline.
He'd use his word and all would say, there goes a clever gent.
When Dukes and Martha Rogers pass a time of day with me, I say me special word and then they ask me after tea.
Ooh, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
You know, you can say it back
backwards, which is docious alley expiistic fragicali rufus, but that's going a bit too far, don't you think?
Indubitably.
So when the cat has got your tongue, there's no need for dismay.
Hear it.
You summon up this word and then you've got a lot to say. But better use it carefully or it can change your life.
For example?
Yes?
One night I said it to me girl, and now me girl's me wife. Wow. And a lovely thing she is, too.
She's
supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. 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 Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins. That was brand new at the movies here in September of 1964. A memory from 61 years ago, for this seems like old times. On today's Seems Like Old Times, we've got on the school colors and we're cheering loudly for our team. It's football records.
Look at me now, 4 years of college, famous professors tutoring me. Scholarship kit, everything paid for, food and vacations, all of it free. Day that I left, everyone gathered, their cheering still rings in my ears. Ray, wreck, rah, rah, ray, wreck, ray, wreck, wreck, rah, rah, wreck, wreck. Wreck, we love you, 'cause I could pass that football like nothing you have ever seen. Couldn't spell a lick, couldn't do arithmetic. One and one made three. Thought the dog was C-A-T. But I could pass that football like nothing you have ever seen. Couldn't write my name, couldn't translate Jevuzame. Never learned to read Mother Goose or Andre Gide. But I could pass that football like nothing you have ever seen. Couldn't figure riddles, puzzles made me pout. Where the heck was Moses when the lights went out? I couldn't even tell red from green, get those verbs through my bean. But I was buddies with the dean like nothing you have ever seen. Passed without a fuss, English lit and calculus. Never had to cram, even passed the bar exam. Because I passed that football like nothing you have ever seen. Couldn't dance for beans, mashed my girls to smithereens. Sometimes blood was spilled, still my card was always filled. 'Cause I could pass that football like nothing you have ever seen. Then there was the week Albert Einstein came to speak relativity. Guess who introduced him? Me. 'Cause I could pass that football like nothing you have ever seen. Had no table manners, used to duck my roll. Always drunk the water from the finger bowl. Though I would not get up for any she, the Prexy's mom, age 93, got up and gave her seat to me like nothing you did ever see. In our Hall of Fame, there's a statue with my name. There we stand by Heck, Lincoln, Washington, and Reck. 'Cause I could pass that football like nothing you have ever, ever seen.
Well, the gambling bug bit a lot of men, but what it's done to me is a rotten sin. I've bet myself clean out of house and home. 'Cause there ain't nothing this side of hell like trying to pick a winner in the NFL, especially when your luck is going wrong. I was on the job and working hard when a man come along with this football card and said, "Try your luck, boy. All your friends have won." So I played the thing for a week or two and got a little behind like most folks do and started doubling up. And that's when they popped me, son. Well, I lost my furniture on a Denver bet. Oakland got my new Corvette. And the Rams are the reason I cashed them five hot checks. The Cardinals took my savings account, and the Redskins got a similar amount that I borrowed from a finance company on a 90-day note. Then Dallas put me in a hell of a fix. I gave up 7, they won by 6. You'd think that Staubach personally hated me. The Green Bay Packers were doing fine till they had to go into overtime. And when you got plus 1, you're dead when they win by 3. And then along come the Baltimore Colts for another stack of the cool C notes. Seems I can't win no matter what I try. Burt Jones might be their franchise, but the way he's bloodshot these old eyes is enough to make a grown man sit and cry. Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers left no choice but for my poor wife to file for divorce on the simple grounds of football cruelty. Then I heard somewhere that the Bears were hot, so with them I took another shot, and you guessed it, pal, the Falcons beat them 40-3. Then Seattle and the cool Jim Zorn made me wish I'd never been born. I even let Tampa Bay take a shot at me. But I've got the Bengals and Chargers to thank for the losses that drove me to rob that bank. Even a cop that arrested me looked like a referee. Now here I sit with a stupid grin, and the jury's just now coming back in, and the foreman and the judge are looking at me real hard. And I know in my heart what they're gonna say. They gotta put me away where I can't play that American dream of trying to beat that football card. Bum Phillips has made a bum out of me. Miami Dolphins ought to put me in that tank. They flipped my wallet enough. And Detroit Lions, oh, they roared through me like Gunther Gable Williams. Like to get my hands on Fran Tarkington, scramble his brains. Archie Manning and the Saints. Ooh, Jets. Mercy. Football. I can't win. I think I'll give it one more shot during the playoffs. Maybe I could win the Super Bowl. Hell, I'm desperate. Football. I hate it. No, I love it. Mercy.
Hey, there's no gambling on this show. You're just going to lose it anyway, as proven there by Glenn Sutton and his 1979 record, The Football Card. And from the 1953 musical, Wonderful Town, that was Pass the Football with Jordan Bentley. And now, George Carlin.
I'd like to do something called Baseball and Football, and it, thank you. That's nice. Because these two activities are so much a part of us, and yet they're so different. Baseball is pastoral, 19th century. Football is technological, 20th century. Baseball is played on a diamond in a park, the baseball park. Football is played on a gridiron in a stadium, War Memorial Stadium. In baseball, you wear a cap. In football, you wear a helmet. Baseball has a seventh inning stretch. Football has a 2-minute warning. Baseball has no time limit. We don't know when it's going to end. We might have extra innings. Football is rigidly timed, and it will end even if we have to go to sudden death. Football is based on downs. What down is it? Baseball is based on ups. Who's up? Are you up? I'm not up. In football, you get a penalty. In baseball, you make an error. Whoops. In baseball, in the stands, there's kind of a picnic feeling, you know? Emotions may run high, but there's not that much unpleasantness. In football, in the stands, you can be sure that at least 27 times during the game, you were capable of taking the life of a fellow human being. Preferably a stranger. And to sum this up, the object of the game is quite different. The object of the game in football is for the quarterback, otherwise known as the field general, to be on target with his aerial assault, riddling the defense by hitting his receivers with deadly accuracy in spite of the blitz, even if he has to use the shotgun. With short bullet passes and long bombs, he marches his troops into enemy territory, balancing this aerial assault with a sustained ground attack which punches holes in the forward wall of the enemy's defensive line. In baseball, the object is to go home. I'm going home. I'm going home.
Here we go.
Go now.
Blue Eyes, you drop kick from here?
I can try.
Drop kick?
It's fourth and four, and we're going to drop kick. Shotgun. Drop kick. On one. Ready? Hey! How about a ref?
Good as gold.
What the hell was that?
That was a drop kick.
Drop kick.
Drop kick.
How much does that count?
3 points.
3 points?
3 points.
For that?
Rah, 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 rah.
My football hero is so big and strong. Crazy with looks. Tops in my books. He makes the touchdown as easy as peaches and cream. And besides, he is the captain of the team. We're shouting. Watch that forward guy, come on, it's do or die. Rah, 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 we've got to score again. We need a touchdown to win.
Rah, rah, rah.
My football hero will save us today. Just watch him play. He knows the way to beat him. Our school will shine. Our school will shine.
All the girls run after him, and my girl's in front of them all. Cause he's a football hero. She's in love with him. In every game it's still the same. She talks nothing but him. Oh, when he makes a touchdown, she goes wild.
Story
her golden gridiron, boy. Yay!
From 1962, the first ever hit for Randy Newman, Golden Gridiron Boy. From 1956, My Football Hero by Bonnie Paul. Love that surprise dropkick in the original version of The Longest Yard. And George Carlin contrasting baseball and football. As we're plunging into the end zone today on Seems Like Old Times. You're listening to Seems Like Old Times. I'm Craig Orndorff, and today our stroll down memory lane has taken us back to September of 1964. Well, now it's time for sports. Baseball coming down the stretch. 2 weeks to go. The Phillies seem to have the National League wrapped up. They were 6.5 clear of the Reds and the Cardinals, 7 on the Giants. But the Phils would lose 10 in a row. On the last day of the season, the Cards and Reds were tied with the Phillies one back. The Cards beat the hapless Mets, while the Phillies topped the Reds, so St. Louis won the division by a game over both Philadelphia and Cincinnati. The Giants wound up 3 back, the Braves just 5 behind. Meanwhile, the Yankees, Orioles, and White Sox were battling for the American League crown, but the Yanks were in the midst of an 11-game winning streak. And they'd take a comfortable lead, but they nearly blew it as the White Sox won their last 9 and the Birds took 7 of their final 8. New York would win it by a game over Chicago, 2 over Baltimore. Then in the World Series, the Cards beat the Yanks in 7. Bob Gibson won the finale, and Tim McCarver batted .478 for the series. In boxing, the heavyweight champion was Muhammad Ali, middleweight Joey Giardello, and lightweight Carlos Ortiz. Tennis. At the U.S. Open, Roy Emerson beat Fred Stolle to win the men's title. On the ladies' side, Maria Bueno, a straight-set win over Carol Caldwell-Grabner. Track and field, back on July 25th, Fred Hansen set a new pole vault record at 17 feet 4 inches. And speaking of, the Summer Olympics from Tokyo was coming in October. Among the gold medal winners, Bob Hayes in the 100, Billy Mills in the 10,000, and Joe Frazier in heavyweight boxing. Off to football, and the college's Ole Miss was the preseason number one, but they went only 5-5-1 this season. And the AP and the Coaches National Championship was awarded before the bowl games. And the number one team was Alabama, but Joe Namath and the Tide lost to Texas in the Orange Bowl, while number two Arkansas beat Nebraska, so the Football Writers Association named the Razorbacks number one. The National Football Foundation picked Notre Dame as their champions, and leading the Irish was Heisman Trophy-winning quarterback John Hewitt. NFL Week 2, the St. Louis Cardinals tied the Cleveland Browns this weekend. That would prove important later in the year. The Browns would be up 2 in the West in early November, but the Cards got hot, won 5 of their last 6, including beating the Browns, but they tied a terrible Giants team at home, and that cost them the division by a half game. Cleveland went to the championship, and they dominated the Colts. And in the AFL, Buffalo beat San Diego twice during the regular season, and then a third time to win the championship. That's a look at sports from here in 1964. And back to the countdown now. Song number 2 on the pop standard singles chart this week was Bobby Venton, Clinging Vine.
Cling to me, clinging vine. Just to me, clinging vine. How I wish those arms were clinging to were mine. Please come back and cling to me, clinging vine. I can't believe that we're through, that you're clinging to someone new. Don't you know he'll never love you like I do? Please come back and cling to me, clinging vine. Cling to me, clinging vine. How I wish those arms you're clinging to were mine. Please come back and cling to me, clinging vine. Cling to me, clinging vine. Just to me,
There's our second Pennsylvania native on the countdown this week. We had Al Martino earlier, and there from Cannonsburg, Bobby Venton, the same hometown as Perry Como. And that was Clinging Vine, the runner-up record from this weekend, 1964, on the Pop Standard Singles Chart. And it would stall at number 2. The record also made it on the Hot 100, peaking at number 17. Well, what was going on here in 1964? Well, how about the miniskirt? Yeah, you'd see mainstream models fully baring their knees. Within a couple of years, the hem would be at the upper thigh. For reading material, the bestseller on the fiction list this weekend was The Man Who Came In From the Cold by John le Carré. In nonfiction, Hemingway's A Movable Feast. On July 2nd, President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, abolishing racial segregation in the United States. Well, back on July 23rd in Boardman, Ohio, just south of Youngstown, a new restaurant opened up called Arby's. For 69 cents, you'd get a roast beef sandwich with potato chips and Texas-sized iced tea. And Harlan Sanders, Colonel Sanders, had more than 600 restaurants offering his finger-licking good Kentucky Fried Chicken. The 74-year-old sold his franchise business for $2 million. That would be about $20 million today. Plus, he was given a guaranteed salary of $75,000 a year for life to act as a Goodwill ambassador. And some new things at the grocery store, Kellogg's Pop-Tarts. And from General Mills, Lucky Charms cereal. And at the market this weekend, we'll pick up a half gallon of milk for about 50 cents. 20 cents for a loaf of bread. Eggs were 40 cents a dozen. Flour, 49 cents for a 5-pound bag. 50 cents a pound for bacon. Duncan Hines cake mix was 27 cents. And a 6-ounce jar of Maxwell House, $1.13.
I'm so particular about my coffee, I make it myself. Make it a new way, by the pot. Using instant Maxwell House. Only one with this recipe. Use 1 teaspoon to a cup. Add water, cold water. Bring all those to a boil. Let it steep for a moment. Now do it my way, see? You like it.
Yeah, a little Caesar. Edward G. Robinson pitching Maxwell House here in 1964. Well, let's give you a bonus record from this weekend. Outside the top 10 was the latest from Burl Ives.
Burly Shell.
Burly Shell.
From the ocean.
From the ocean.
Shining in the sun.
Covering the shore,
when I see them, my heart tells me that I love you more than all the little pearly shells. For every grain of sand upon the beach, I've got a kiss for you, and I've got more left over for each star that twinkles in the blue. Pearly shell,
from the ocean,
shining in the sun,
covering the shore.
When I see them, my heart tells me that I love you more than all. On the beach I've got a kiss for you, and I've got more left over for each star that twinkles in the blue.
Pearly shell,
from the ocean,
shining in the sun,
covering the shore. When I see them, my heart tells me that I love you more than all the little pearly shells.
More than all the little pearly shells.
There's Burl Ives along with the Owen Bradley Orchestra and Pearly Shells. And that made it to number 12 on the Pop Standard chart. That song was playing on the radio here in September of 1964, and it is again today on Seems Like Old Times. We're at the 2-minute warning on today's Seems Like Old Times, but before the final gun, I want to remind you about our website, oldtimesradio.com. Check it out for our schedule, the affiliate list, and the Listen Now page where you can hear previous shows on demand. You can find Seems Like Old Times on Facebook and Twitter, and the email address is Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at oldtimesradio.com.
Football forever, it's football forever, yes, football forever is my game. Crazy football, since I was a football, now football I call my middle name. Right from the kickoff, I'm one loose pickoff to cheer on the team to victory. Oh, yeah, rack 'em, sack 'em, can soak 'em, hack 'em, crack 'em. Touchdown, but he didn't have the ball. That's real great. Get your signal straight. Pass, run, no, kick.
Football Forever, that was Neil Hefti's orchestra and chorus from 1963. Well, time has expired, and we won! Yay for us! It's been a salute to the gridiron on today's Seems Like Old Times. And now, we're up to the number one song from this weekend in our spotlight year, 1964. But first, the top news story of the day, the presidential election. The incumbent was Lyndon Johnson. Now, of course, he wasn't elected president. He took over after the assassination of John Kennedy. And while his record in office was short, Democrats were solidly behind him. The Republicans, on the other hand, were sharply divided, and they remained divided after the convention that nominated Arizona Senator Barry Goldwater. But he had some well-known people supporting him.
I asked to speak to you because I'm mad. I've known Barry Goldwater for a long time. When I hear people say he's impulsive and such nonsense, I boil over. Believe me, if it weren't for Barry keeping those boys in Washington on their toes, do you honestly think our national defense would be as strong as it is?
An umbrella, just that, or the symbol for appeasement. A table, just that, or a sellout abroad. A wall, just that, unless it helps you remember what has happened to a billion people in this world and what can happen to you and to your children.
This is a picture of a dead American soldier shot by the Viet Cong guerrilla in Vietnam. What's our government doing about it? And the 275 other dead Americans? Nothing, not a thing, because we are fighting a no-win war in Vietnam, a war we don't want to win. Vote for a real American. Vote for Barry Goldwater. In your heart, you know he's right.
Ronald Reagan, John Wayne, and Raymond Massey campaigning for Barry Goldwater in 1964. Now that tagline, in your heart, you know he's right, was mocked by the Johnson campaign with the comeback, in your guts, you know he's nuts. And then on September 7th, the Johnson campaign aired one of the most controversial ads in political history.
6, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
These are the stakes. To make a world in which all of God's children can live, or to go into the dark. We must either love each other, or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
That was the Daisy ad. implying that Goldwater would start a nuclear war. The ad aired at 9:50 p.m. during the NBC Monday movie, and right after it aired, the White House switchboard was overwhelmed with calls protesting the ad. Over the next few days, it was widely criticized. Johnson was pleased with it. He wanted to run it again, but his press secretary, Bill Moyers, talked him out of it. But the ad ultimately did not hurt Johnson as he went on to win in a landslide. The presidential election was making headlines here in September of 1964. And headlining the Billboard magazine Pop Standard Singles chart this week was Dean Martin.
Everybody loves somebody sometime. Everybody falls in love somehow. Something in your kiss just told me my sometime is now. Everybody finds somebody someplace. There's no telling where love may appear. Something in my heart keeps saying my someplace is here. If I had it in my power, I'd arrange for every girl to have your charm. Then every minute, every hour, every boy would find what I found in your heart. Everybody loves somebody sometime. And although my dream was overdue, your love made it well worth waiting for someone like you.
If I had it in my power,
I would arrange for every girl to have your charm. Every boy would find what I found in your heart. Everybody loves somebody sometime. And although my dream was overdue, your love made it well worth waiting for someone.
Dean Martin, Everybody Loves Somebody. The song was written in 1947 by Irving Taylor and Ken Lane and first recorded by Frank Sinatra. Not too long after that, Dean sang the song on Bob Hope's radio show, but it was done in a slower tempo, ballad style. Well, in the spring of 64, he decided to give the song another go, and his producer, Jimmy Bowen, picked up the tempo, added a choir, and then Ernie Freeman gave it a more modern arrangement. As we've mentioned, this was the time of the British invasion, and the Beatles were all the kids were talking about, including Dean's son, Dean Paul. One day, Dean had heard enough of the Beatles, and he told his son to just watch. He had a song that was going to knock the Fab Four off the top of the charts. And he did it. On August 15th, Everybody Loves Somebody replaced A Hard Day's Night at number one on the Hot 100. And the song was in its final of 8 weeks at number one on the Easy Listening Pop Standard Singles chart this weekend in 1964. And that's it for this week's show, everybody. We are all out of time. It's been great having you here, and I'll have your seat ready for you again next week. And until then, this is Craig Orndorff saying so long for Seems Like Old Times.